Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. News time is 8:14. I have Tom Fisher, Summit County Manager, here in the studio. And we're going to first open up by talking about a fond farewell and a salute to the three prominent county employees who are or have left service.
Yeah, and it's actually more than that, Carolyn. If you think about earlier this year, Naveed Vernon, our historian, retired. Steve Martin, our assessor, has recently retired. Brent Ovard, who was the deputy health director with decades of service to the county. Anita Lewis, who has served the county for 30 years, has retired. And then just recently, Travis English, our county fair manager, as well as our special offense coordinator, has announced his resignation. So, you know, all of that's happened in the first part of this year. Some of it planned, obviously, and being able to react to it in that way, and get some other people into those positions so that we can keep services rolling. But, you know, the other thing that we're looking at as these things happen, I mean, we want to honor, of course, that amount of service. That's decades of service to the county and experience in those areas. But it also opens up some opportunities of some of these programs and services. For instance, our history program under the direction of Naveed, was largely focused on documenting our culture, our heritage, largely focused on the east side of the county, so the agricultural heritage, the pioneer heritage. And what she also did while she was in service to the county is collected a lot of artifacts, collected a lot of pictures, documents, and all of that stuff exists, but we don't have it very well cataloged right now. So we're stepping back as that position is open, certainly wanting to continue a program around history, but really analyzing what that program needs to be. You know, do we have the opportunity to open up all of that information, all of those artifacts, catalog them, digitize them, provide them out on a web-based system in order to have it completely open to the public all the time.
Yeah, so a different set of skills, perhaps curator.
It could be a lot of different things. And then, you know, the opportunity to bring those things forward and not just have them at the courthouse, but maybe open them up to the public in other venues around the county, maybe even around the state or other things. So we're talking to a lot of people about that specific program. We're talking internally to see what ideas other employees, other directors, other elected officials have about some of these programs and how we organize them. So we're really kind of stepping back and making sure that if it's not like an emergency situation to have a position filled, that we're really analyzing it to see what we need and what we want to do in the future with those.
Yeah, so, okay, and that's not an emergency, but I think the fair coming up and special events are a little bit of an emergency. So tell us a little bit about what the plan is there to cover for Travis.
Sure. And I want to compliment Travis. I mean, first of all, being with the county for 6 years and taking the fair in conjunction with the fair board and the public to where it is today and improving that, improving the number of visitors that come to the fair and the offerings there. It's truly reflecting our heritage as we project that. But so we still need to put on a fair in the beginning of August, and so that's coming quick. Travis has done a great job of preparing us for that. He has worked very closely with the Silly Market Group over the past 6 years on putting on the fair. We have been in discussions with them that they will likely continue to support the operations of the fair, as well as we have some folks that have helped Travis over the years on a temporary basis during the heavy months of the fair preparation, that probably will be back to help us through that event. So that kind of gets us through the 2019 fair, which is going to be a great event. But you know, we have to plan for the future, and we need consistent leadership in order to put on that event each year, plan for the 2020 fair, as well as the constant churn of special events and film production and different things that happen in our county that have to have some regulation and coordination around those. That was the other function that Travis performed for the county. And so very quickly we'll be putting out a permanent position for hire on that.
And does that position change at all, or is that pretty much what Travis was doing?
We're thinking right now that it might not change all that much, but as we're, you know, doing that process with our human resources department, we'll be looking at that as well to see if it will stay the same or be slightly different.
And who will be the interim?
So I don't want to announce that just yet. I'm still working on it, but we will have an interim for both of those functions. It may not be the same person covering down on both of those functions.
Meaning
the fair and special
and
events.
I see.
I'll have a better answer for that next week, I believe.
What kind of an events calendar is coming up for the summer?
Well, it's big. I mean, you know, a lot of things happening at the canyons, a lot of film production, television production going on in the county. And so all of that has some component that coordinates law enforcement, coordinates fire, EMS, all of those things those events rely on the county to help coordinate. Any kind of health department regulation that has to go on with a special event. So we're involved with all of that, and it's a big job.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then Anita Lewis, a longtime familiar face with the county. She was the assistant county manager. And what's happening there?
So she was the assistant county manager up until about a year and a half ago, where she transitioned to be the rural affairs director. And so she was not only covering down on management over fair activities, senior services, history. She was also doing a lot of community engagement work around open space issues on the east side of the county, our Council of Governments, and making sure that it met four times a year and did the business that it's supposed to do. Covering down on our involvement with arts and culture, and very recently making sure that our rap culture and restaurant grant processes were moving forward correctly. But there's an opportunity there to look at those functions, especially that function of around, you know, being a place for people to go to deal with issues that may not be the Snyderville Basin issues, but are similar for the rest of the county. That community engagement piece that is so important and becoming more important as we've learned over several different projects and programs over the last couple of years. We're having to expend a whole lot more resources on community engagement to keep people informed, keep people involved. As much as we'd like to think the traditional outlets of information provide everybody the information we need, it doesn't anymore. So we've got to be out there even more.
And so what is the plan for that position? Is it getting posted?
So it's not going to get immediately posted, I don't think. Again, we're stepping back to analyze how we want to do that and how we want to cover down on those functions. There will be a function in the future very similar to this, but I want to make sure that we're expending the resources correctly to accomplish the goals that we want to meet in the future.
Okay. Let's move on and talk a little bit about flooding.
Sure.
And water levels. We were chatting beforehand, and there are some concerns that the county
absolutely
has very dangerous areas, but then again, there are some other areas where you're not so worried about.
Well,
this.
I mean, so the the main message, of course, we want to get out at this time of year is, you know, recreating in our watercourses at this time of year is a touchy business. Not that it can't be done, and not that there aren't professionals that can help with that, but our water is running fast right now. It's running high and it's cold, and the combination of that can cause some dangerous situations for recreation or just people that are hanging out by the river, and you want to be very careful. But then the other issue that comes up around our high water at this time of year, which it's usually high at this time of year, and we're always watching it. I think this weekend is going to be kind of the high of that. But there's always threats to property when water gets this high. And the county is watching that closely, both from our emergency management point of view, public works, watching our bridges, watching our culverts, those types of things. And then our sheriff's office, as they're patrolling around, are watching water levels as well. We're prepared for everything from search and rescue type of activities to having sand and sandbags at our public works department ready for residents to pick up. If they feel their property is threatened or they want to prepare for that. If we get a lot higher water levels, we'll be staging some of those things closer to where those problem areas are. So we're ready for that. But as you said, the Old Ranch Road area had some issues last week. It seems like that has subsided a little bit, or at least we've put out information in order so people don't drive through the area fast and cause wakes or even hydroplane through those areas and are careful. Bicyclists are another issue as they go through those areas where the water might be over the road. But that's what we do. We're out dealing with those situations. Yeah.
So you mentioned the rivers, the Upper Provo and then Weber.
Correct.
So talk a little bit about that. Are there property issues along those riverways?
Well, whenever the water gets to these levels, the water gets close to some properties, that's just the nature of where those properties have historically been. We watch the water gauges that our water managers have in place, that the federal government has in place, to kind of judge how much we have to ramp up in response to high water levels. Again, I think we're going to see the Weber at a fairly high level this weekend, but not official flood stage. But we're watching it closely because, even though the gauges are there and even though the science is there, there's still judgment that has to be made along the way.
Yeah, and just to remind people that in a conversation with senior hydrologist Brian McInerney last week, he said that it's especially dangerous below the dams because of the way they're regulating and letting water out, and that
yeah,
it can be.
We've heard that same thing, and the main thing, property and property protection is one thing, but we want to make sure that people are very careful around the waterways, and because the temperature, the speed, and the height of those waterways, they're at a dangerous point at this point.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to cover?
No, that's all I've got this morning.
Okay. Thank you very much, Tom Fisher. He's the Summit County Manager. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot, Carolyn.
Our next guests in studio here are Linda Jaeger. She's with the Community Engagement Department. She with the city, and Jed Briggs, Budgeting and Strategic Planning, and Tim Henney, Park City Council member. Welcome. Thanks for coming by.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So we're here to talk about the Park City Visioning 2020. And this year, Park City embarked on a future visioning project. And today, apparently, the survey seeking input goes live?
Yes, we're really excited. This has actually been in the works up at City Hall. We've had an RFP where we looked for a partner firm to help facilitate the community visioning process, selected that firm. We've been doing some prep, and now we are ready to roll it out. So we are starting with a pre-visioning community survey, and that is available online. We just have a link on our website on the landing page. And what we really want to do is take the pulse of the community before we get started in the visioning process and see what's important to them, what issues are important to them, opportunities that we may have missed as a community, what are they looking forward to most, and use that as a baseline for discussions going forward.
Okay, and this is just an attempt to define what things will look like going forward from 2020 and on.
Yes, and Jed worked a little bit more on the survey, so I'd love to have him give some, okay, Jed, some more feedback there.
Yeah, I mean, the survey is kind of a basic survey. It has a lot of demographic questions to start it off, but I think what's cool about it is it also is a little bit more granular in our approach, where we're looking at it through kind of the lens of neighborhoods and zip codes. And then we're also looking at kind of the major issues or opportunities that we want to focus on over the next, 10 years or so. By having kind of the different variables, we'll be able to kind of cross-tabulate the data and have interactive kind of data maps through our partners with Future IQ that they're going to be providing for us, where members of the community and council will be able to drill down and have these interactive maps and be able to really understand kind of what are the different areas that we want to focus on and or the different areas that we want to improve through kind of this different zip codes and neighborhoods.
Okay, so you talk about the results, being able to set the framework for the future. Land use, economic, social, environmental issues, I presume, are all part of that. Now, how do we do that in a state like Utah, where the legislature kind of steps in to define things for us? I mean, and a great example is what's happening with the Extel development in Wasatch County, where at one point it was a very small project with the military installation development, but with our legislative, people who are in office, they basically redefine it and say, no, it's going to be this way. How do we work around that? I mean, what are our limitations with that kind of thing?
Well, Carolyn, within our jurisdictional boundaries, we rarely run into something like that, although we could. The example you're using with MIDA, they do have their own ability to create their own land use framework and matrix. So that's a risk. It's always going to be a risk. We're on the higher end of the risk spectrum in a state like Utah, where we tend to be philosophically not necessarily aligned with the majority of the state legislatures. But at the same time, we can also point to examples where last year we had the bag ban issue, and it was about local authority, and the state legislature reaffirmed that local authority for Park City. So we're going to run into it here and there, but I think it comes back to it puts additional importance on doing a visioning. That's what visioning is all about. When we did it back in 2009, the community was very clear on what the values of the community were, and we've translated those into critical priorities and action plans, and we're delivering on those action plans that are directly linked to the values of the community that were identified through a process very similar to the one we're doing now. And it's time to update and kind of look out for the next 10 years or so. But okay, we're always going to have pressures on our boundaries. And whether it's MIDA or just entitled growth outside of Park City, that exists. That is there. And so what, to me, with all that pressure on the outside of our boundaries, it just makes it increasingly important to have our own identity and character clearly identified and rooted in values of the community. So that's what this is about.
So when we talk about the survey that's going live today, we're a small town, 8,000 people on just any old given day, I guess. And during Sundance or high seasons, ski season, we might, balloon to 40,000, 50,000 people?
Service population about 40,000.
So when you do this survey, will there be a management of how you get answers? I mean, will that 8,000, will it be, I guess, coded as zip codes and that type of thing?
Yes, we have specific demographic break where zip code, age break, et cetera, neighborhood. So we actually selected Future IQ. We had a lot of great firms respond to the RFP, but they are excellent in their data and be able to pinpoint this specific demographic feels this way about this issue compared to this demographic, and we can identify where is the gap, where do we need to develop more consensus. So it's really great data that I think will be very helpful for council and the community going forward and looking at where we're going in our future. Just adding to the piece you mentioned before about development going around outside of our boundaries, that is a really great segue into the second part of what we'll be launching today, as well as an application for our think tank workshops. We will be looking to recruit anywhere between 30 and 60 residents and local business owners, Park City business owners, to participate in the think tank process. There'll be two workshops, July 29th and 30th. It's a total of 3 hours. We're doing one over lunch and one late afternoon. And the idea of that, it will be facilitated by David Burrell, who is the principal from Future IQ, and taking a lot of those trends and issues and things that are happening outside of not only our zip code here, but things that may affect us, whether it be climate change or economy, demographic shift. Younger folks are moving into serving an elected office. And how are all those things? How can they shape the future of Park City? So again, that will be an initial exercise. We'll take the information from that and from the community surveys and roll those out into community engagement sessions that we'll hold with the public throughout the summer through early October. We'll come back together and reconvene the think tank and work on presenting the vision to council in January 2020.
Okay. And the think tank, that involves a fair number of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is a certain amount of potential burnout and engagement and, you know, complacency mm-hmm. that you can run into. So have they had experiences in doing this in other communities like ours where they are able to keep people engaged in part of it?
Absolutely. They've done this throughout the world. They have most recently done this in Hilton Head, South Carolina, which has a very similar balance between local residents and a tourism economy. They've also done a lot of work in the Northwest as well. So they are very experienced at facilitating and keeping these as a robust workshops. But I think it's been very successful for them, for their firm, and we're excited to make that happen here in Park City.
So just to clarify, how does it differ from, say, the work that the council and the city has done with the critical priorities, transportation, affordable housing, social equity? How will this enhance that? Or
it's a great question. I think when you're looking at our kind of two major documents that really help to kind of organize our thoughts and really set up our goals, you're talking about the general plan and our strategic plan. The general plan is our land use document. And the land use, the general plan is really organized by those four core values: historic, character, small town, sense of community, and natural setting. Those were developed 10 years ago, the last time that we really did a community visioning session. In terms of the strategic plan, when you're looking at those critical and top priorities, the values really inform the strategic plan. The values and the vision, which is what we're really trying to define through this process, is kind of the why. What is the purpose of this municipality? What are our core kind of things that we find to be the most important? And that really helps to influence and inform what our critical and top priorities should be, I would say. So then once you start to figure out the why, then you work on the what. The what is really these priorities, these desired outcomes, and then you develop your goals and your actions.
Okay, and the think tank effort mm-hmm. is just one event or two events. Sure. But this group of people will help to define and collect the data.
It'll be more discussion and more brainstorming based
analysis.
Based on the pre-visioning survey data, as well as looking at, as I mentioned before, trends and other things that are going around worldwide that may affect us here in Park City, and how will that affect our vision? It's a great discussion exercise. Future IQ will then take that information, as well as the surveys. We'll work that into the community engagement sessions and questions and topics for discussion that we do throughout the summer. To elaborate on that, we'll have places where we'll go to where the library and the MARC, where people already are, and foster those discussions. But I'll also be looking for community members that would like to host these type of discussions in their homes. Miles Radiman, when we started doing some visioning back in the 80s, his living room conversations were a big part of that. So we want to bring that back as well. So we're looking for all sorts of different opportunities to invite and engage with our community. And our community, a diverse group in our community, we want to hear from all ages, students, seniors, everyone. I think it's really important. So we're going to make it easy for those who are interested to participate. We really want to hear their voices.
So in the information that I had a chance to look through, it also talks about visualization, data analysis and visualization, and then a lab portal that is set up by Future IQ. Can you talk a little bit about what that means? I mean, it sounds very technical, and a lot of older people may find it a little bit off-putting.
I kind of swim a lot in the data world, just working on the budget. And it's tricky. It's tricky to be able to convey how all this data forms an opinion and informs the public. And I think that's where, when we were looking at the different applications, when we were going through the RFP process on the community vision, Future IQ really stood out because they had a lot of data visualization, and it really is set up through these different, they call them data maps, that instead of just using some kind of a regression model or looking at two different variables, it's looking at a multivariate system where you're able to pinpoint exactly different demographics, whether it's age group or zip code or neighborhood, and say these are the areas that are really impacting them, and so we should be focusing on that. It also will start to distinguish different types of goals or values or things that we should be looking at and focusing on in a very kind of broad sense. But then what's cool about it is it's interactive. So as you have these different layers, you can put in different demographics, and it'll have like a drop down menu that you can put in. You want to look at ages 30 to 41 or something like that, and or you can look at all of the ages, or you can look at different ethnicities or something like that. So it's a really cool dynamic way of looking at the data that I don't think we've had anything as sophisticated as that before.
And that
I can confirm we haven't had anything as sophisticated before, and that is a little frightening, Carolyn, because it's different from 1992 when a really interesting and intriguing guy walked through my front door when I lived down on Lower Woodside and convened a community neighborhood visioning session that we had offered our home for, and that was Miles Radiman, and there were some other interesting characters that we had just moved to town and didn't know but got to know through this visioning process. And that was, how we did it back in 92. We sat around in a living room and we talked about things, and we had a moderator who would prompt with questions. And, what Jed is describing is we want to capture all of that. And at the same time, we want to have the ability to look and analyze the data that we collect in a more granular fashion. And for guys like Jed, that's super exciting. For people like me, it's a little more exciting to kind of talk about those bigger concepts and see if we've changed our core values, or if those four core values are going to be reaffirmed, and if that's the track that we want to carry on, the way that we address them and implement plans and policies and deliverables might change because of our new context and environment. But that's the idea. And without clearly identifying our character and our identity, it gets opaque. It gets very vague in there. So the more clear we can be, the more precise we can be, and the more broadly we can have that feedback loop from the community to the council, from the city and the council back to the community, the more it's going to benefit everybody, because they'll understand where they live.
Well, and I know that Miles and you have many skills, but swimming in data is not one of them.
You got that right.
Two.
What I like, too, is that there's kind of an art and science to this process. So this is the data is the science part, but then the art is really all of these community conversations and dialogues that we're going to be having. And I think the data just helps kind of inform those dialogues. But really, the art is being able to kind of bridge opinions and bridge gaps in these community conversations.
So what kind of response will you need to make it statistically valid? I mean, what as far as engaging people into the survey and that type of thing? Because there are a lot of surveys going on right now throughout the community, both in the county and the city, the school districts. All the school districts, they're undergoing all kinds of growth challenges and changes and adjusting to the new 21st century learning and 21st century communities. So what do you need to be valid?
Well, actually, this survey differs from every other year. We do the National Citizen Survey, which is a statistically valid survey that we do with several other cities throughout the country that we benchmark against. This is a little bit different. This is more of a informative survey, just to take the pulse and just to see what issues are top of mind and what folks would like to talk about, just to inform the process. So not as scientifically statistically relevant as the other surveys we've done in the past, but more just taking the pulse of the community as we start conversations. The process of visioning throughout will be much more statistically and scientifically based.
Okay, because I mean there are a certain group of us who tend to show up at meetings and always have an opinion, and we'll likely be on taking that survey. But mm-hmm. if we're not expanding beyond that, it's just not going to be that much different from holding a regular meeting and hearing the same old stories. And we kind of know what the stories are. We're worried about traffic. We're worried about affordable housing. You know, how will what comes out of this visioning session address those things? I mean, you're not going to be surprised if people say, we hate the traffic here.
Yeah, I would be shocked if we didn't get a reaffirmation of the things that we've been addressing and we were asked to, respond to by the community, which is why we've created the critical priorities and the action plans. So that would really surprise me, but that would be, surprises can be bad and good. So if I, as an elected official, need a surprise, this is a great opportunity to provide that and to provide maybe an adjustment to the course that we're on or maybe a complete change from the course we're on. That would be shocking to me. And I would say that this community, we have the same people that tend to show up at meetings and whatnot. And at the same time, when we go out for a community visioning, we get great participation. That seems to really broaden it out. I would hope that once again, I would ask the community to please pay attention to this and participate in this process, because it's critically important for all of us to know who we are today and what we want to be tomorrow. And the more clear we can be on that, the better it is for everybody. Because if you're locating to Park City and you have a misunderstanding of the core values, that probably isn't going to go so well at some point in the future. You're going to wake up and go, how did I get here? What am I doing here? And the same thing for the people who have been longtime residents. They have to have good information to base decisions on. You hear it all the time from people. I hear it from people too. This is not the town I moved to 40 years ago. Correct. It's not. So you need good information to know, is it going to be the place you want to be 10 years from now? Do you want to be here tomorrow? Are you happy here today? That's really at the core of what we're trying to do.
Okay, so when does the survey shut down?
Survey will run through the end of July, July 29th. It is up now live on our website, so parkcity.org, and just look for the Vision 2020 Park City Heart to the right, and that will get you right to the survey. We do have it in English and Spanish. And then we also have a project website we've developed for Park City Vision 2020. The application for the think tank will also be on that shortly as well. And I encourage folks to give me a call at the city or send me an email, linda.jager@parkcity.org, and we'd be happy to give them some more information.
Okay, and how long will the survey take most people to
do? About 10 minutes.
Okay,
yes.
10 minutes. And then you had also at the beginning of this conversation mentioned the think tank dates. Would mm-hmm. you mind repeating
sure,
those
the think
for
tank,
listeners?
We have it scheduled for July 29th and 30th. July 29th will be in the evening from 5 to 8. Food and beverages will accompany the robust discussion. And we'll follow that up with a lunch session on Tuesday from 11 to 2. And it will be at Miners Hospital.
And to participate as a think tank member,
yes.
do you have to be a resident of
resident
Park City?
Or business owner in Park City.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Anything else that you all would like to say about this?
We really want to hear from everyone, so I encourage everyone to participate in. I promise it'll be a great experience.
Okay. That's Linda Jager with Community Engagement with the City, and Jed Briggs, Budgeting and Strategic Planning here, and then Tim Henney with the Park City Council. Thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Thanks.
Bye now. Hour. I have Emily Fisher, Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director, here in the studio with Cam Scheidel, who is the parent of student Ellie Scheidel. Ellie is from the South Summit School District, and she is a participant in the Active 8 program, which is a middle school program that is sponsored by the Youth Sports Alliance, and I think it's been opened up kind of new to South Summit this year.
Yeah, so, what we did this year is we expanded our Activate programming to South Summit, and we decided to run a pilot program. And what we found is we had really great support and really great participation. We had 20% of the school participate in the programming in the first year, and just had a lot of really great support. There, what we discovered when we ran our pilot program is there's no after-school programming in South Summit. And so it was just very popular on those early release days to make sure the kids had something to do that was productive and supervised and interesting for the kids.
So, Emily, let's just do a little bit quick of a reminder of what Activate is and what also the Youth Sports Alliance does as far as the other winter sports programs, because there's been one around for quite a long time that's addressed the early years, the primary school years.
Yes. So the Youth Sports Alliance, we run after-school programming. And so our Get Out and Play program is for first through fifth graders. And that's really just a short, bite-sized, 4 to 6 week programs to try all the different winter sports that are available in Park City. We started just as winter sports, skiing and snowboarding, and now we've expanded to the full school year. So we have mountain biking, we have triathlon, we have bouldering, and then in the winter we have all of the ski disciplines, so alpine skiing, cross-country skiing, freestyle skiing, snowboarding. We have luge and all of the skating programs, so speed skating, ice hockey, and figure skating. So we run our programs year-round now for those Get Out and Play kids, and we do them on the early release days. So every Friday, the elementary school kids get out at 12:30, and we run our Get Out and Play program. What we found 3 years ago is then the kids were moving on to middle school, and there was no programming for the kids on the early release days, and so we started our Activate program. We started at Ecker, and now we're also at Treasure. So that is for those middle school kids. And what we found when we sat down with focus groups is they didn't want to just do sports. They wanted to do arts. They wanted to do sports. They wanted to do healthy lifestyle, cooking. So we added a whole variety of activities. Nationwide, students drop out of sports at an alarming rate at 12 to 13 years old. And so we really just want to introduce them to as many things as we can to see if they can find a passion and pursue that passion.
Okay. And let's turn to Ellie Scheidel. What grade are you in, Ellie?
I'm going into ninth grade this year.
Into ninth grade, okay. And you were a participant in the South Summit Get Out and Activate program, which is a middle years program.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about your experience.
I did three of the programs. I did the boxing, art, and acting, and they were all super fun. All the instructors were super good. And the acting one, it was scene production. So you just worked on scenes. And me and my friend Laura, we got to do a scene production where the only thing you could say was dude. So it was just to work on and you have to it was just to help you learn how to use more of your body and just be more exaggerant with your body motions, positions. And overall, it was just super fun.
Yeah, just different ways of expressing besides just using your voice and words. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. What was your favorite?
Oh, that's hard. They were all fun in different ways, but probably the art, because all of my friends did it. We all did it together. So we all did kind of the same art, and it was just so much fun.
And what kind of art projects did they have you work on?
We worked on three different mediums. We worked with watercolor, temporal, and acrylic. And oil paints instead of temper. We didn't get to do that, but for the acrylic we did paint pours, which it's you put a bunch of paint in a cup, and you put it on a canvas, and it all spreads out really cool, with the colors mixing, and then the watercolors and the oils were just super fun, and she taught us different techniques to use for at home, and we got packets every day. For more techniques and color schemes and stuff.
So do you and your classmates, are you thinking that maybe you'll be taking some art classes if you're able to
as
a result?
Year.
Or
yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Me and my friend are doing lots of art classes.
And boxing, that's pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah, that one was fun.
Yeah.
Boxing was probably my favorite.
Really? Did you have a lot of girls taking boxing?
Yeah, it was kind of split in half. It was boys and girls.
Okay,
so
interesting. Yeah, who gets to box anymore? Well, Cam, this is Ellie's mother. Kim, what is it about the program that you've enjoyed or that you think is valuable?
Well, I think there's a number of things about the programs that are great. First of all, there is limited after-school programs at South Summit beyond the traditional, like, football or basketball. So the fact that the Activate program came and offered a huge variety of activities from, like, skiing to mountain biking to yoga to boxing to even things that aren't really necessarily sports-related, like the drama or acting and the arts. So the variety of programs was great. They were really affordable. I feel they were priced at a price point where most any family would be able to take advantage of the programs. And, you know, it's really nice to have somewhere for the kids to go. The middle school gets out at 1:30 on Fridays. So that can be a, you know, that's 3, 4, 5 hours till some parents get home from work. So it really is nice to have something for them to do that is constructive, you know, beyond just being on your phone or your iPad or, you know, binge watching Netflix. You know, it was really well-run program. And I think the thing I noticed the most is she just had so much fun with each of them. And I have to say, the gal, Trilby Cox, that ran the program, or at least that was my interface with the program, it was so, so well-run. The communication was just absolutely great.
Yeah, well, we've just got one more minute here. And maybe what you can tell us, you've got the program maybe running into Wasatch County. You're looking at
Yeah, I think the really exciting thing for us is the Women's Giving Fund is part of the Park City Community Foundation, and every year they award a high-impact grant in the summer. And the Youth Sports Alliance is a finalist for that high-impact grant. And so we are so excited, and we are hoping if there's any Women's Giving Fund members out there, please consider voting for the Youth Sports Alliance. We're going to, if we win that grant, we're going to take that money and expand our staffing so then we can hopefully expand into every school in Summit County. What we found is we had great support and great participation in South Summit, and we would love for all kids in Summit County to have the opportunities that the kids in the Park City School District have. In the last 5 years, we've gone from being in 4 schools and having 800 participants to being in 11 schools last year with 1,600 participants, and we've done it all with the same staffing. And so really, if we want to expand to the rest of Summit County, we need some seed money just to expand our staffing, because after a year to 18 months, our program fees usually cover our staffing. So it's just, it's a big push for us, and we're really hoping that we can win that grant, because we feel like all kids in Summit County should have the same opportunities as those kids in Park City.
Well, thank you. We're going to have to leave it there. That's Emily Fisher, Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director, and Ellie and Cam Scheidel in from South Summit. And thank you so much for joining us this morning. It sounds like there's some really great things going on out in our middle school, middle years community. So
thank you.
Again.